Each choice we make moves us toward fear or love. On my Life and Laughter podcast, we'll talk about those choices and learn how to attract more love and connection and laughter. This is Perry Kinder. Let's get started. Life and Laughter listeners, welcome back to my podcast. This is Perry Kinder, and I am here today with Dr. Corinne Ellsworth Beaumont. And I met Corinne when we did our TED Talks in Bountiful TEDx. Welcome, Corinne.
Hi. Thank you, Perry. I'm so glad to be here.
I am so glad to have you here. When I heard your presentation when we were practicing doing the rehearsals, I was so connected to your message. It was so important to me. We have a history of breast cancer in my family, and the things that you're doing through your design is just revolutionary. And I don't think people will even understand, even from this podcast, understand how revolutionary it is. But let me introduce you before we get into that.
Great.
So Dr. Corinne Ellsworth Beaumont, her creative approach to visual communication uses metaphor to make topics like cancer approachable and empowers patients to advocate for themselves to improve early detection. Through her breast cancer nonprofits campaign, Know Your Lemons, she has reached over 1.5 billion, with a B, people online in more than 30 languages through her websites, volunteer-led classes, social media, and even an early detection app. Many patients attribute Corinne's work as the reason they are alive today. She is the founder and CEO of the Know Your Lemons Foundation, as well as Dandelion Health. She's been featured on CNN, BBC News, ITV, radio stations, and numerous publications. She is an advisor for the World Health Organization's Global Breast Cancer Initiative, a member of the World Cancer Day Campaign Committee, and frequently presents at global conferences. And this is the shortened bio. She is amazing. Welcome, Corinne.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here and talking about breast health today.
Isn't that a fun topic?
Yes.
I'm sure you talk about it 24 hours a day. So thank you for coming and talking to my listeners. I appreciate that. So tell me a little bit about, you have a history in graphic design. Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit about that process, how you got into that. What made you?
So my background is I'm a graphic designer, and it started with Who's the Boss?
So the TV show?
That might date me a little bit. But I saw Angela Bauer as the advertising executive coming up with all these ideas and being able to show them to people. And I just thought, that seems like the best job in the world. And so, you know, we had a Mac at my house, and I would start practicing on all kinds of things. I think my first design program was the little mouse that came with Super Mario Brothers, you could make like 4-frame animations. And I just thought that was so fun. So, you know, when Photoshop came out, I was like using it all the time and playing around with it. And I just really loved to design. And the main thing I loved about design was being able to share and teach people things. I thought it was so cool that you could share thoughts and ideas through visuals and make something beautiful. So that's, you know, I all the thanks to Angela Bauer.
she only knew. And so you took your design, graphic design, in a different direction than just marketing, advertising. You took it into the medical field.
Yeah.
And I had never put those two concepts together, how graphic design can help doctors describe things and educate patients. How did you find that connection?
Yeah, well, I kind of, you know, some people say I'm a visual learner, or I love to learn through sound or things like that. But actually, the way we learn depends on the circumstance. So one example might be if you needed directions to get somewhere to southern Utah. Let's say we're in northern Utah right now. I could give you step-by-step instructions of just using words.
Right.
So like take a left, turn right, drive 12 miles, etc. Or I could give you a map. Mm. And that map could visually show you where you are in the space and help you navigate. And pretty much everyone would say, give me the picture that's going to update and show me exactly right. Where I am. Help me visualize where I am in that space. And so in the medical field, what's been going on for a very long time is we're going to describe everything to you in words when it comes to patients. Mm-hmm. But we have all these famous anatomy illustrations, right? Like we've got Michelangelo and Da Vinci. You know, Da Vinci did a lot of work in visualizing anatomy and understanding the body. And for centuries, physicians learned through images on how to understand the body. And then we've had this like preference for words that's come along. And now it's like, so what happened to the images? Why aren't we using images to learn about our bodies as much anymore?
Right.
And how can we make understanding our bodies more accessible, particularly when it comes to being able to prevent onset of extreme diseases such as cancer, being able to detect it early.
Right.
So that's where I see the power of design. Is design has this amazing ability to communicate with people, and visuals have this really unique way of telling us things in ways that aren't using words, that are really powerful and can communicate quickly.
Wow. And you also have a history of breast cancer in your family.
Yes.
Your grandmothers?
Yeah, both of my grandmothers died from breast cancer, as well as my step-grandmother from Mexico. She also died from breast cancer.
Oh, wow.
And a really close friend that I grew up with.
And tell me her story. I know that she was a big part of what came after.
Yeah. So Suzanne and I were childhood friends. We were music stand partners.
What kind of music? So,
we both played violin together.
Oh, nice.
And we were always sharing a music stand, like all through like elementary and junior high and middle school. And we were very close. And when she had her second son, she was at the hospital and the baby wouldn't latch onto one of her breasts. Mm. And so the lactation consultant came in and said, you know, I've seen a lot of breasts in my day and this doesn't look right to me. Hmm. I think you need to be seen by a doctor. And so her son had some health complications that took priority. So a few weeks goes by and the nurse calls her up at her house.
Wow.
That's how concerned she was. And she says, have you had that checked out yet? So she went to the doctor. The doctor said, oh, you're in your late 20s. I mean, you see where this is headed.
Just dismissive.
This is just an infection. And she says, well, I've been on antibiotics for a couple of weeks and this hasn't cleared up. And it was just put down to, well, I guess this is one of those mysteries. And then
we'll never know.
We'll never. How would we be able to investigate breast problems? It's a mystery.
It's a mystery.
Right. Sent her home. And then the nurse followed up with her and mm-hmm. said, can you get a second opinion? Mm. You know, wrestling
good
with insurance.
Nurse.
Yeah. This nurse was persistent. Some wrestling with health insurance, because why would someone in their late 20s need to investigate anything wrong with their breast? Anyway, eventually she was able to get to a doctor that did a biopsy, looked at the cells underneath a microscope, which is the only way to tell if something is definitively cancer.
Right.
And she was diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer.
Oh my gosh.
So she had a really rare, aggressive form of breast cancer that was in her bones.
Oh, wow.
And the prognosis for that, especially at the time, was not very good. She ended up living for 7 years, had another child.
Wow. That's amazing.
Really amazing. And just the way that she handled that situation, you know, was really something to witness, but also to be there to support her as well. And so the symptoms that she had were symptoms that not every physician knows about. Mm. And she had redness and swelling. The skin was changing its texture a little bit. And so, you know, when you have a new baby, of course, that's going to get put down to mastitis and things like that.
Body changing hormones.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, there were some other indications there, and the lactation specialist, again, who had seen lots of breasts in her day, mm-hmm. knew how to identify that something wasn't right.
Wow.
And that's, you know, with our charity, the story that we hear the most are women saying that they see our work, they recognize the symptom of breast cancer in themselves, they go to the doctor says, oh, you're
it's
too
nothing.
Young. You're too young, or you're just worried. Go home. If it gets worse, then talk to us. But because of the way we educate, they advocate for themselves and they push for testing
right.
instead of being dismissed through statistics. And that's how they're diagnosed early.
So they really take charge of what they know could be a problem.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's talk about the graphic design that brought all this around. You created a poster that you're trying to get in doctor's offices, schools, yes. I mean, everywhere. It's brilliant. Describe what you did to create this poster.
Yeah, well, basically what I did is I made an image that saves lives from breast cancer.
Yeah, literally.
And just by looking at this picture, people can improve their chances of not dying from breast cancer.
And so because this is an audio podcast, yes. It's hard to show the picture, but it's you have an egg carton filled with 12 lemons. Mm-hmm. And why did you choose lemons?
So lemons are a great visual stand-in for breasts because they look a lot like breasts without being breast. They have nipples, they have skin, and it's really easy to show what symptoms look like on a lemon, and you can bypass all the censorship issues that are out there. It's also really friendly and approachable. If I were to actually do a poster with 12 photographs of different breasts that have disease, mm-hmm. No one would want to look at that.
Right. It's scary.
Pretty grotesque.
Yeah, it's scary.
Yeah. But by being able to use a lemon as a stand-in, you can make it super friendly. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, for the first time, people go, hold on, there's 12 symptoms of breast cancer. So, you know, the image is at knowyourlemons.org. I hope people can have a chance to look at that as we're talking through the podcast.
Yes, I hope they do. Yeah, right now, just go to your Google machine and look up knowyourlemons.org, and you'll see this visual of the lemons with the 12 symptoms. And so what are the 12 symptoms that women should look for early stages of breast cancer?
Yeah, so, you know, it's basically any new change that shows up on your breast needs to be something that is taken seriously and watched. So there's a couple of changes I want to talk about first, some normal changes. So according to menstrual cycles, we have breast cycles that follow our menstrual cycle.
Right.
And, you know, a few days after your period ends, so after you stop bleeding, that's when the hormone levels are low in your body. And that's when your breasts are going to be the most normal.
Right. Not going to be swollen or painful.
Exactly. Yeah. And then estrogen increases in our body, and then progesterone comes in through the last half of the cycle, and that causes swelling and tenderness and lumpiness.
Right.
And so what happens is, you know, as women, we're told to do self-exams, but we're not told about breast cycles and how our breasts change throughout the month. And
so interesting
it's
to
so
me
confusing.
That we are never taught that. I mean, even our doctors don't tell us that. They just don't say, hey, your breasts are going to be sore for a couple of days. That's totally normal. You're not dying.
Yeah.
It's okay. Or even when you start to develop breasts, some girls don't know what's happening and they think they have breast cancer.
Yeah.
And I think we just don't talk about breast development, breast stages, breast cycles nearly mm-hmm. enough.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about cup sizes,
right.
We talk about underwires being uncomfortable, you know, we talk about cleavage, but we don't talk about, like, what's the development of the breast over its whole life cycle.
Right, which is a basic health thing that women should know.
Yes.
It just blows my mind.
Yes, exactly. So first of all, knowing that information that breasts change throughout the month is really important. And then, because a lot of times what happens is, we're feeling things are tender or a little bit painful. And that's when we feel around, right? Because all of a sudden our breasts are talking to us. They're like, hey, I'm just so annoyed about life. And I'm just like, oh, I just can't right now. You know? So you talk back and you're feeling, and then you feel these lumps. And then women go, wait, hold on. Mm-hmm. You told me to look for lumps. And now I'm feeling my breasts and there's lumps everywhere. Well, that's because there are milk producing elements inside our breasts that like swell and things. So lumps
are
normal.
Lumpy.
Yeah. Yeah. Breasts are lumpy. And so being able to understand what the normal lumps feel like, mm-hmm. you know, they're often feeling like soft cooked peas or soft cooked beans. And it's like milk lobules that will fill inside. As well as lymph nodes. Mm. So that's the normal lumps that you'll be feeling. Everyone's breasts are different. Everyone's going to have slightly different lumps in different places. A good way of kind of knowing what's normal is feeling if that lump is in the same site on the other breast, in the same location, because bodies tend to be somewhat symmetrical.
Right.
There's always exceptions to the rule. So, so none of this podcast is me being a doctor, like diagnosing people. It's just giving you a framework to understand things.
Just get to know your breasts, get to know how they feel at different stages of the month, you know, where the lumps are usually. So when you do find something that's out of the ordinary, first you'll know that it feels different. What would it feel like?
Yeah. So a cancerous lump usually, not all the time, but usually feels hard. Like a lemon seed, and it's usually immovable.
I like the description you gave of the slipperiness of the lemon seed. Yeah.
Yes. So you know, think about the last time you held a lemon seed between your fingers, and remember how that felt. And that's how I visualize breast cancer is showing this lemon seed in a sliced open lemon to visualize it. So that's the most common sign of breast cancer is a hard, immovable lump.
Right.
The lump can be any shape or size. Sometimes it's kind of long like a bean. Sometimes it's really bumpy. Like cancer has its own rule book of how
it just does what it wants. Right. It doesn't care.
Yeah. So that would be like a significant thing. It can also, cancer can also kind of spread itself, just under the skin. And that will feel like your skin has thickened in a specific area. So that's another symptom. A dimple is also a symptom of breast cancer. This is when...
like a new dimple, like if you've never had one before.
Right, yeah. Right. And it's not like cellulitis or anything like that. And it's when there is a tumor that's deep in the breast and it starts pulling on the ligaments.
Oh, wow.
And so it starts making an indent. You might not be able to fill a lump with that. A way to check for that is if you put your arms up and down slowly, and if you notice that dimple doesn't change at all as you're moving your arms around, like the skin doesn't seem to be responding to it, that can be an indication. Nipple changes. So an inverted nipple. So that's when you have a tumor behind the nipple that's pulling the nipple in toward itself. And then like rough skin around the nipple that just doesn't seem to heal. Right. So there's things like eczema and things like that, but this is different. And it can cause itching as well. There can be unexpected fluid. So fluid that wouldn't be from breastfeeding, you know, that's something, a bump on the surface of the skin. One breast is drooping suddenly or like growing in size. And then there's also a symptom called, peau d'orange, which is French for orange peel.
And so fancy,
right. And that's when, the skin starts to look dimpled like an orange peel, and it may or may not change color. So those are, you know, most of the symptoms of breast cancer. We have an app that explains all of them in detail and explains what a harmless thing might look like that versus, you know, how to understand if it's cancer. And usually it's if it persists, if it gets worse, or if your instincts tell you, this does not seem like my normal body.
Right.
That is the common thread between all the women that have told us their story was something didn't seem right.
Wow. And trust yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you're not sure, I mean, get things looked at. And I think it's so interesting, like you mentioned with your friend, you know, doctors are so dismissive of younger women having breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it happens. It happens all the time. You think that they'd be more in tune with, yeah, this woman might know her body. We should probably check this out. But giving them the permission to be persistent, I think this poster, these symptoms gives them that education. Like,
yeah.
I've got three of these symptoms. I don't feel a lump, but I want to get checked.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's what we're missing as women is confidence with our breast health.
Yeah.
Because without information, we can't be confident. Right. And so instead of us just kind of wandering around, not knowing anything about our breasts other than our cup size,
right?
That, you know, it should be really easy to learn this information. And that's what I discovered for myself. So after my second grandmother died from breast cancer. I was starting my master's degree in design. And I realized I didn't know anything about breast health. Mm-hmm. And, I wasn't taught anything about breasts in school. That's for sure. I think that's the case for most of us.
Right.
And so I started researching, okay, what do I need to know for myself? And the questions I had were, am I more at risk? When should I start getting mammograms? Mm-hmm. And what does a lump feel like? And how do you do self-exams? And I went to a cancer library and asked them those questions in my early 20s. And they said, oh, you don't get people your age coming in asking this stuff. But for me, the bar was set pretty high. I had two family members who died from this before I was willing to investigate it.
Wow.
Right. And I just thought no one should have the bar set that high that, you know what, I'll start learning about breast health after two family members die from this.
Then I'll look into it.
Right. Right. And I'm like, you know what, design could solve this problem. You know, I, as a designer, could come up with something that would make it so you don't have to go to 12 websites mm-hmm. and try to assess what information's reliable and what applies to you. And so that's really where the journey started, was me realizing design really wasn't being used for this. Like, we have a lot of pink ribbons.
Right.
That, like, tell us, hey, here's the topic of breast
cancer.
Pay attention. Right?
Yeah.
But it's awareness that disease exists, but it's not awareness of what to do for yourself when it comes to breast health. So that's why I started my charity, was to really tackle this problem of breast health education not being easily shared or communicated. And then how do we improve early detection for breast cancer? And the reason why that's so important is because when it's found in the earliest stage, the survival rates for breast cancer are over 99% in the U.S.
That's huge, yeah.
Right. So if we can get people diagnosed in stage one and two, that really can make a difference in someone's life, in their family's life. And, you know, until we have a cure for breast cancer, this is what we can do now
right.
to save lives, is educate and help people find it early. And people need two things for that. So the first thing they need is to be able to undergo screening where it's available. So mammograms are really important. I know here in Utah ranks 50 out of 52 for screening rates for
that
mammograms.
Makes me so angry.
Right?
Why do we not take the time to get checked here? Why?
The most common thing I hear is people say, oh yeah, you know, actually breast cancer doesn't run in my family. So it's not really something that I have to worry about. But what I'm about to say is going to like turn that idea on its head, which is, only 15% of people diagnosed with breast cancer have a family history of it.
Wow.
So 85% of people diagnosed with breast cancer have no family history of it.
That's amazing.
So like, mammograms are so important. Another reason why it's really important is because it can find a cancerous lump before it can be felt. And so here's something that we can do over the sound waves. I think we'll work. So if you put your three middle fingers together, that is about the average size lump found by accident, like doing nothing.
That's
so just
big.
Like in the shower one day or getting dressed or something, that's the average size of a lump found by accident.
That's so big.
About the width of three fingers. If you hold up your thumb, that's the average size of a lump found with people who do regular self-exam. A lot of people don't do regular self-exam because they're not quite sure what they're doing. Mm-hmm. They don't really know what to feel for, and they forget. It's so easy to forget.
And it's scary. You don't want to find something.
Right, right. Yeah. And sometimes people can feel anxious. Again, like, anxiety and fear is what takes the place of when we don't have information and when we're not feeling knowledgeable about stuff and we're not aware of actions that we can take. So,
right.
So, we created a Know Your Lemons app that will send you reminders. We have Mona Lisa.
And download that app now.
Yes.
Go right now.
It's
download
free.
The Know Your Lemons app. Free breast information, breast health.
Yeah. And it saved lives. Like, our best reviews for the app are 5 stars. It saved my life.
Oh my gosh.
So
how does that feel?
It's really amazing to be able to like do something positive, you know, take the lemons I was given. With my family and my friend, and be able to put something better out into the world and help people. So, and then, you know, going back to the hand.
Oh, sorry. I got distracted.
if you hold up your index finger, that's the average size of a lump found with one mammogram. And then if you have multiple mammograms to compare, so you keep up on your regular mammograms, you know, every year or so, then the average size of a lump found is the width of a pinky finger. So, you know, just the tip of your pinky finger. So, you know, put your hands together and go, okay, three fingers wide versus the pinky.
Yeah.
Right.
It's a big difference.
And like breast health really is in our hands. Like, it's us that picks up the phone to say, I'm going to book this mammogram appointment. Mm-hmm. It's us that says, you know, I'm going to download this app and turn on the reminders. You know, it's us that says, you know, I'm going to do a self-exam while I'm in the shower this morning because I know now is a good time to be doing it. Right. And so, you know, that's a really important thing to think about, is realizing that it's down to us, right? It's not up to our doctor to tell us how to take care of our breasts or, you know, those sorts of things. We need to take better charge, take care of our health. Because a lot of times, you know, another reason why mammogram rates are low is because women tend to be taking care of the health of those around them.
Right.
But as not prioritizing their own health. So, you know, being able to say, actually, my health is important to my family as well.
Yeah.
And being able to prioritize that. Some people are afraid. Some people worry that it hurts. You know, to that, I say there are some things you can do to reduce the pain of a mammogram. So a mammogram feels a lot like getting your blood pressure taken.
Wrong. It feels like someone's closing a garage door on your boob.
on your breast, right? So you've got that pinch and that yes, squeeze that, yes, that happens for a few seconds,
yes,
and then it releases, right?
It does. It's not, yeah, permanent, but it is not comfortable.
Yes. So like an easy thing to do would be to take an ibuprofen before you go.
Right.
Make sure you go at the right time in your cycle if you're still menstruating. That can really help reduce.
So what's the
pain.
Best time to go?
A few days after your period ends, so the same time to
soft.
Do a self-exam.
Great.
Yep, that's really good. And a good mammographer can also help reduce some of the pain by how they're positioning your breasts and how much pressure the plates are using and things like that. But, you know, if you've ever had waxing done, or there are other things women have done that are way, way beyond more painful than, you know, 5 seconds.
Yes,
of,
and it
of
could
a
save
mammogram.
Your life. So
exactly,
it's worth it.
Exactly.
And how did you find the 12 symptoms? Because they're not listed somewhere in like a medical journal. There's not. Here's the 12 symptoms of breast cancer. It doesn't right. exist. You had to create these. You had to find these.
Right. Yeah. So like symptoms are usually described through text. So they'll say like changes in size, changes in skin texture, changes in the nipple. Right. So they're listed out a little bit more broadly.
Right.
And that makes it really hard to say, oh, that specific thing is my specific thing.
Right.
So what I did is I, you know, looked at all of the research. I ended up getting my PhD in the topic. So I've done a lot of work in understanding how to communicate and communicate accurately. And I also looked at a lot of pictures of breasts that had breast cancer. Mm. So being able to look at all the photographs of breasts with breast cancer, not an activity I'd recommend for people as a hobby, yeah, but that helped me kind of narrow down how to visualize these things that were just being written about in a text description. And then I worked with oncologists to say, is this accurate? And then I worked with patients to say, how are you interpreting this image? So I was making sure that the visual was communicating exactly what it needed to communicate and not something else that wasn't intended.
Right. And I like too the process of creating a graphic design that wasn't offensive to mm-hmm. Maybe cultures or countries that didn't want, you know, graphic depictions of breasts. How has that been received in countries like that?
Yeah. So we now have the campaign in 33 languages.
Wow. That's so cool.
And we have over 600 volunteer educators in over 60 countries. So one of our trained volunteer educators is Ju Matil. He works in Indonesia. In the last 2 years, he's taught well over 2,000 women. Indonesia is a pretty conservative culture and society. And he, without any barriers whatsoever, is able to talk to breast health to young girls in a Muslim boarding school.
Wow. That's huge.
It's huge. And it just means there's no barriers to this anymore. We have women in Saudi Arabia that use our Know Your Limits materials to be able to talk about breast health. because there's no censorship. Like, no one's going to say, you can't look at lemons.
They are nasty.
Right. And in some cultures, the lemons are green. So we have a green Know Your Lemons campaign that we use for them. But it's been so well received. We're even educating in places in India, in really remote villages that don't even have a word for breast.
Wow.
So they go in and they're using these lemons to explain things. Because again, pictures don't have to have words. You can understand something by just looking at pictures. So it's helping in areas where there's low literacy. It's helping in places where people are busy and don't have a lot of time to learn about breast health.
I don't have time for that.
So like in 60 seconds, someone can look at this image and that memory sticks with them for a long time. We've had a lot of people say, I saw this image when a friend shared it on social media several years ago, and it just stuck with me because it was so different.
Yeah.
And then I noticed something later and went to my doctor and insisted on getting testing, and that's how I got diagnosed early. So
yeah, it was so impactful to me with our history of breast cancer in my family. You know, my doctors never said, you know, these are some symptoms you could look for. They just say, you know, get a mammogram once a year. They don't say look for changes in the breast or the nipple or the dimple or any of the things that you said. And it was just so like, how did I get to be this age and not know this information? And it was really discouraging to think of all the generations of women who didn't have this information, that it could have saved their lives. And I know you go into schools and you talk about breast health. Why is breast health stigmatized? I think in our culture is really stigmatized. They don't talk about breast health in our in our public schools. What is the difference between breast health and sexual health?
Right. So
I think it gets confused.
Yeah. It does get confused. So men and women both have breasts.
And men can get breast cancer.
And men can get breast cancer too. It's rare. 1% of those with breast cancer are men. But so breasts aren't actually a sexual organ. It's not part of sex education, again, because both men and women have breasts. It's just women have milk producing ability with their breasts.
They don't create life
men,
in any way.
And men do not. And so, right, like there's been this kind of male dominated discourse and perspective on what breasts are that has created this atmosphere of, we only talk about breasts in this way, wink, wink, right? Like, ooh, breasts,
right?
But like, we don't say that when we're talking about elbows or knees
Maybe we should.
Or anything like that, right? And I get like an elbow and a breast are very different, but you know, there is this whole kind of taboo and like mystery and like sexuality around breasts that makes sense, but it's also a big barrier to help, like, allowing us to talk about it. So when I'm able to use a lemon to visualize a breast, I'm sidestepping all of that.
Right.
Because no one's like, lemons.
Those sexy lemons.
Right. And so it's like, oh, lemons. Oh, so now we're just talking about breasts. We're not talking about breasts, right? And that's how visuals can change things. And so for a long time, you'd see in a lot of breast cancer awareness campaigns, Victoria's Secret models pulling down one side of their bra to show you their mastectomy scar.
Oh my goodness.
Right. And that is like sexy and death, like right next to each other. And, you know, because cancer is often associated with death.
Right.
And so people don't want to talk about cancer. They're fearful of it. They avoid the topic. Breasts are often associated with sex. Mm-hmm. So people get embarrassed. There's a lot of censorship. We don't want to talk about it. So you've got breast cancer, which is the equivalent of sex death.
Right.
So this is why we have the pink ribbon. Because we're like, look, it's a pink ribbon. It's not sex death.
It's lovely. You know?
And so it's like, well, can we just get rid of that? Can we get rid of the fear? Can we get rid of the taboo and just talk about breast health?
Right.
And so we can't really do that through words because breasts, you know, cancer, right? And so here's a way of just like, let's just go all the way around this. Like, let's just sidestep this whole thing that's been blocking this topic for centuries.
Yeah.
And just talk about breast health and just talk about what we need to know and understand what we can do to save the lives of women around us, including our own.
Yeah. And it empowers girls, I mean, that they get in the habit of looking for signs, doing exams, being aware, and they treat their breasts like an important body part, not like a sexual part of them. They become, it's part of their healthy body. I think that's so powerful to tell women to take charge of their own breast health.
Yeah. And you know, like breasts are pretty remarkable, right? They can give life, and they really respond to the environment. So when there are like toxins in your body, like the breasts are there, like, you know, they've found like toxins coming in through breast milk,
right,
and like all sorts of things. Like breasts are like this kind of sensitive environmental instrument almost. Right.
I never thought about them being environmental. Yeah. That's interesting.
The breast barometer.
I saw that in Mean Girls. There was a breast barometer in Mean Girls. So let's talk a little bit about your Dandelion Toolkit. This is a new thing that you're doing.
Yeah.
So what is that? Explain that to me.
So when someone is newly diagnosed with breast cancer, that is the perfect time to take them to med school. Right?
Right. Absolutely.
Hi, you've been diagnosed with this scary disease. Let's bring you up to speed to what, you know, I learned in med school, and I'm going to use all my medical terms with
and
you
as I talk. Scare the shit out of
right,
you.
Right, exactly, yeah. Exactly. So yeah. It's like, okay, endocrine therapy, and, you know, you're HER2 positive, and like all of this stuff. And so, you know, patients often describe that moment as just a flood, like a fire hose of information just being like thrown onto them. And it's really overwhelming because you have the emotions of being diagnosed. You have the uncertainty of what's going to happen next. And then someone is communicating to you through accurate terms you've never heard of before.
Right.
So there's this huge catch up that patients have to do in that time. And I thought, what if we could use visuals?
Revolutionary.
Right. To make this so it's a little bit less scary in terms of the information was easy to understand. So what I have is this visual of a dandelion to explain how cancer spreads, to explain what cancer uses to grow, and also the ways that cancer is treated. So, and this is at dandeliontoolkit.com if you want to look at the visuals, but I show several dandelions all in a row that explain the difference between staging according to stages of a dandelion. And so stage four is when the seeds are fully open and the wind picks up and it moves it to somewhere else. That's stage four.
Wow.
And then zooming in on that seed, there are two parts that are tested to be able to understand how the cancer is growing. And that's if it's using hormones like estrogen and progesterone, or if it's using proteins like HER2 and a lot of other kind of indicators for that. And knowing those two things determines what treatment is going to be most effective for you.
Wow.
And the same ways you try to get rid of a dandelion in the grass are the same approaches to cancer treatment. So chemotherapy is like you put a chemical over the whole lawn, and chemotherapy targets things that are fast growing. So like nails and hair,
yeah.
Right? Mucus, like things in our throat, like those types of things are all really impacted with chemotherapy because cancer grows quickly, right? So it's going to affect the grass, which is your body, and the dandelion, which is the cancer. Targeted therapy is like putting a chemical over the whole lawn, but it's more focused on those dandelions. So the way it impacts the whole body is very different than with chemotherapy. Hormone therapy is like putting a chemical over the whole lawn, but it's mainly targeting the seeds. So it's trying to keep it from reproducing. And then you've got surgery, which is like digging out the dandelion, right? And then radiation, which is like using rays from the sun to wither like a specific spot in the grass, kind of like with a magnifying glass. And then immunotherapy is strengthening the grass to help it choke out the weeds. Mm. So, you know, being able to take just that simple analogy that took me a couple of minutes to explain,
right.
That's like most of the overview.
Yeah, that's a lot of information.
And then understanding. Yeah. So having that visual, so while the doctor's talking, the doctor can point to the visuals and take notes on this piece of paper. And then the patient gets a tiny 4x6 inch notebook. Usually they're given a giant binder mm-hmm. that's written at a university level and approved by the legal team.
Oh, nice.
Right?
I'm sure it's really easy to understand.
So easy to understand. So it's a 4x6 inch notebook that the patient can take that conversation card from that initial diagnosis conversation, take the information from that. It's mostly check boxes, so you don't have to read too much of the doctor's handwriting. And then you put that into the notebook. And then all of a sudden you're going to see all of the spots that haven't been discussed yet because there are blanks in your notebook. And wow. then you can say, hey, we haven't talked about fertility issues. And actually that's really important to me.
Wow.
Or, you know, I'm really concerned about these different kinds of chemotherapy. Can you help me understand the difference between them? Just these little, like just having a framework to understand how cancer treatment works can make all the difference. And then in addition to that, there is a customized video that either the patient or the healthcare provider can make in just 2 minutes. And it's just answering a couple questions. And then it puts together this gorgeous video of this dandelion that explains specifically exactly what that patient's diagnosis is and what the plan is for treatment. And then they can share that video with family and friends in a way that they're now going to understand everything the patient knows without having to repeat themselves again and again and right. again. And it's really hard for patients to kind of take all that information from the healthcare team and then interpret it into language that's familiar to them and then communicate that again to someone else in language that's familiar to that person, right? So words are really hard to transfer, but images are really easy to share.
That's so empowering. It gives them so much more control when they know what to ask and what to expect and what's going to happen. Because you go into it, and even if you're listening, you're not taking it in because you're so scared.
Yeah,
To have them things explained in a way that you can remember.
Yeah, the mind goes blank.
Yeah, you do.
And,
you're like, uh-huh.
Exactly. Yeah. And doctors say, I know that they're not going to remember most of what I say to them.
Right.
So why not have a tangible map of the conversation you had for you to look at later
That's
when you
so
get home,
smart.
When you have that mind space to go, okay, I remember some things, right? But not rely on the patient or the caregiver's ability to write down really good notes.
Right.
That's unfair.
That just seems like a no-brainer.
Yeah.
I mean, with all the technology we have, that should have been done, you know, decades ago.
Yeah.
Well, good for you for doing it. And you are so smart in explaining things and creating things that are easy to understand. Do you see yourself creating a whole new field of medical graphic design?
Yeah. There's medical illustration that's been around for a really long time,
right.
But people that are using metaphor to explain things.
Yeah, that's new.
Is new. And you know, there's a creative, tension between artists and the medical community, right?
Sure.
Cause they're like, no, a cell doesn't look like a dandelion seed. A cell is kind of this oval thing with the mitochondria.
Very
exactly
by the book.
Right. And it's like, no, we're talking about concepts here.
Right.
We're not, you know, no one that's looking at the dandelion images are going to be able to perform breast surgery on people afterwards.
Right. Right.
They're just going to understand why some things are being recommended over other things.
Right.
And so, I'm hoping that there will be more designers that are able to do that. And, you know, for me, I got a PhD in design so that I could be seen on a more level playing field,
right,
with the medical profession being a doctor of design.
Right.
And then also, you know, just being able to understand how the healthcare system works and be able to bridge that gap. You know, it's my goal right now. The dandelion kit is for breast cancer, for early stage and for metastatic, and to expand that to more cancer types and just transform the way these conversations happen in the clinic, because doctors don't receive really extensive training on how to communicate health information to patients.
Right.
And some doctors
strange.
Are better than others at communicating information. And so, you know, being able to have a unified way for the whole healthcare team to talk to the patient that's not reliant on medical jargon or a specific kind of personality or specific talent for being able to describe things in layman's terms can really empower a lot of patients and a lot of healthcare practitioners to say, oh, finally, I have an easier way to explain this stuff to help, you know, that patients can remember, because patients can accurately remember a conversation in a non-life-threatening situation.
Sure.
Like, they can accurately remember about 15% of the conversation.
Wow.
So if you've got,
that's
like,
not much.
Yeah, if you've got a 45-minute conversation, which is about the average for, you know, you've been diagnosed and here's everything we know and here's all the imaging results and things like that, the patient's only accurately remembering a few minutes of that whole conversation. So you just think, you know, emotions aside, that's a really inefficient way of communicating with people. Yeah. But when visuals are used, they can accurately remember things like up to 80%. So why not?
That's huge.
Why not tap into that visually communicative part of our brains, right? There's so much that we do in our lives through visuals and how we operate and connect with the world. It's a different kind of language that we don't use very often, but visuals are how we navigate.
More often. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Corinne. I'm one of your biggest fans. Listeners, go to knowyourlemons.org, download the Know Your Lemons app. You can order postcards and posters from your website, you know, send them out as Christmas cards, whatever you want to do, get the information out.
I mean, that's the thing people ask us the most is like, I want to be involved. Mm-hmm. What can I do?
Right.
So we have a shop on our website where you can order postcards and magnets. We have some fun t-shirts, things like that, just to open up conversations and get people to know about it. But like, if you go to your doctor's office and you don't see the 12 signs of breast cancer poster in that exam room, let your doctor know.
Or just hang one up. Yeah. Just take one with you.
take one with, like, buy on the website. We have a sticker that you could just peel back the sticker and like put it right
on
the wall.
Slap it on the door.
And like the poster is there. People can also volunteer. We have an online training course where we can teach anyone on how to become a breast health educator and teach people in their community. We give you the tools. We have a global network of volunteers that you get to meet with every month over webinars. It's really exciting. And, you know, download the app. It's free. Not a lot of people know about it. Like, you are a charity's marketing budget, right? So tell people about the app. Follow us on social media at Know Your Lemons. We have lots of information that I wasn't able to share today.
Yeah, there's so much. Yeah, it's such good information.
You never know. A lot of people have said it was a friend on social media that shared this picture that changed the course of my life.
Wow.
So, in between looking at, you know, cute puppies and pandas.
And funny videos.
Like, throw in 12 lemons and you might just save a life as well.
Yeah, and congrats to you for saving so many lives. You've done a phenomenal thing. So thank you for being here. Thank you for what you do. And thank you for listening, listeners. Come back again next week.
Do you want more life and laughter? Check out my blog at lnlcoaching.com and find me on Instagram and Facebook at Life and Laughter Coaching. See you again soon.